Good afternoon as Friday turns into the weekend. I'm Andy Sylvester, editor here at City AM, and welcome to the City View podcast. Today I'm joined by Sasha O'Sullivan, our opinion and features editor, who will be talking with me in just a minute about Boris Johnson's week from hell. But it's been a busy enough end in the city to an already busy week. This morning, Ryanair confirmed it will quit the London Stock Exchange by the end of the year in order to comply with EU ownership rules that have come into sharp focus since Brexit. Airlines HQ'd in European countries must be owned and controlled by nationals from within the bloc and a couple of bits of the EEA. It's completely barking, if you ask me, and wildly protectionist, but it is the EU, so boss Michael O'Leary said he expected Brussels to, in fact, go further on ownership rules in the not-too-distant future. UK borrowing was the subject of some discussion too this morning, with new data suggesting borrowing fell less than had been expected in October, a reflection of higher interest on public debt and the cost of the COVID-19 vaccination rollout. Debt payments are up almost 15 billion quid year on year as a result of inflation pressures affecting the cost of borrowing. For context, that increase alone over the past 12 months is about a third of the military budget. In sporting news, there was good news for the Premier League, which last night signed a deal with American broadcaster NBC. The Comcast-owned network paid $2.7 billion over 6 years for rights to the world's most watched league, revenues which will be distributed amongst the clubs and to the league itself. Soccer is growing at pace in the US. The deal will cover the period the States is hosting the World Cup alongside Canada and Mexico in 2026, and NBC hope that will see another bucket load of new fans join the party. Meanwhile, the founder of the tech firm Affinity, Ziad Chishti, has stepped down as a result of sexual harassment allegations. Chishti's firm's advisory board was chaired by David Cameron, but the former PM stepped down earlier this week when the allegations came to light, which he said he had no knowledge of when he accepted the role. Sasha, good to have you with us. We've been talking about the city a lot this week, and it's been a very dramatic week in the city, not least with last night's sudden announcement that our cup of tea would now be private equity funded, with CVC picking up PG Tips. But in Westminster, a few stops down the district line, it's been a week from hell for Boris Johnson, and it started with, well, sleaze allegations continuing to dog the party. And we're now, I think, at the point where we're about 20-odd days into what would have been Owen Paterson's suspension, which kicked this whole thing off.
Yes, I think Owen Paterson is probably thinking right about now he should have just weathered the 30-day holiday and let the party kind of kick on as it had been. But instead, Boris Johnson has had to enter yet another day of defending sleaze allegations, and the motion to reinstate the indictment of Robert Paterson, not Robert Paterson.
Owen Paterson. He's not a Hollywood star yet. No. Maybe that's his second
I do keep getting the two confused, and it's it's throwing people off somewhat. So that motion was blocked by a kind of troublemaker Tory MP, Christopher Chope.
Yeah.
And so Boris Johnson had to watch the thing get torn apart again on the floor of the House of Commons, and was probably thinking to himself, because he had a slightly raspy voice this week, I wish I could have lost it completely and I could just shut up and stay home. And at the same time that he's been facing sleaze allegations, Keir Starmer seems to have finally found his feet somewhat 18 months, 2 months, 2 years into leader of the opposition.
Slow start.
Slow start, but managed to get there eventually. And he laid into Boris Johnson over the continuing allegations. But what he skillfully managed to do was actually bring in what's a much bigger political problem for Boris Johnson, and that is the rail fiasco.
The fact
that people in the North are not going to get what they were promised, and they might have just forgiven the Tory party for the sleaze and the kind of second jobs and, you know, Geoffrey Cox's various holidays in the British Virgin Islands. But if they're not getting what they're delivered, that becomes much more problematic.
Well, that was it. I mean, there were Tory MPs doing the rounds yesterday morning before the announcement from Grant Shapps, despite the fact we pretty much knew it all already because it was all in the papers Thursday morning, who were, I mean, embarrassing themselves in various public fora, really, because they were saying that Boris hadn't actually said what he'd said. And really, this was a media narrative that Boris actually hadn't promised HSD, but he had, you know. And now the Eastern leg has been promised. A vast range of upgrades are not going to happen. There is 96 billion quid going in to rail upgrades across the country, which is, you know, a good thing. But it ain't what was promised. And we're now 2 years through the Boris Johnson administration. it's likely it will only be a four-year administration because we think there will be an election probably the second half of 2023. Promising is one thing, delivering is another, and there must be people within the Tory party now that you speak to or read that are concerned that halfway through, we've got a lot of promises, a lot of sunshine, a lot of sunlit uplands, but actually on the ground, is life feeling much different for Red Wall voters today than it did 2 years ago in terms of money coming into the area? And the answer is probably not that much.
Well, exactly. And there's a lot of discontent on the Tory backbenchers, not least because they were forced to march in and fight over something which was then pulled back of Owen Paterson. But now the rail, the integrated rail view is really an insult to injury for them because they're thinking, well, you know what? We turned all these Labour voters. We came in and we fought them and we promised that we were going to deliver something. And I think what's also, you know, very concerning for Boris Johnson and Grant Shapps is probably not the best person you want to deliver bad news because he's just always so happy.
Yeah, he's very Tiggerish, optimistic chap.
He is, and there's been this sense of kind of talking down to people outside of London, people in the Midlands, people in the North, and saying, well, you know what, actually, these rail upgrades, these will be better than you thought. These are the ones you really want rather than the ones you said you want.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of sense of Westminster saying, you know, we promise this is actually better for you, you just don't know it yet, is what people found skeptical about the Tory party prior to Boris Johnson's election.
Yeah. Even better, it's just a complete comms disaster because
that too.
If you just come out and announce that actually a lot of rail journeys across the north are going to get 10 to 15 minutes quicker because we're spending bucket loads of money, people say, well, that's jolly pleasing. But when you tell them at the start of the year that it's going to be a lot faster than that and they're going to spend more money, then you get into a question around expectations. And it is not as if, and this is another issue, the money that is already being spent on these rail reviews, actually the additional cost to finish off HS2 is not that much. Now, I'm personally a bit sceptical of the project and the costs that are involved, but if you're going to do it, if you're going to build this costly white elephant,
do it.
Then, you know, don't chop a leg off, as one Tory backbencher pointed out this week. Anyway, that's HS2, that's Tory sleaze, but they've got a growing battle in London as well. Whitehall versus Sadiq Khan, now very much a live issue. We have 3 weeks until the government needs to decide on whether it is going to either renew or come up with a new bailout measure, essentially, for TfL. TfL is hugely reliant on fare revenue, far more than most global cities. Fare revenue collapsed in 2020 and the start of 2021 during the pandemic. The slower return of people, particularly at weekends and particularly tourists, has meant that that fare revenue gap from projections pre-pandemic has got wider and is now a funding gap of 6.6 billion quid across TfL. And this week, Sadiq Khan and TfL both warning of a system of managed decline. What does that actually mean in practice, Sasha? Rail cuts, tube cuts, bus cuts, right?
Yeah, exactly. It means that there will be less services for less people and the ability to travel across the city will deteriorate over time. And, you know, this is part of the kind of back and forth between Number 10 and Sadiq Khan's office has been raging since the pandemic struck last year. And I think that this has really pushed to a head something which has been boiling away in London a long time and something which I think has kind of struck a lot of Londoners and a lot of people in the Southeast when we talk about the Northern Rail stuff, actually, is that people say, oh, you know, and we've got Andy Burnham basically saying that people in the Southeast are swimming in gold. And actually, there are people in London who can't get to where they need because the services just aren't there. We don't, you know, the night buses that we used to have a couple of years ago, we just don't have anywhere the level of that. The night tube, all of these things will just slowly start to fall away. And so Sadiq Khan is using that leverage to kind of say, well, you know what? London is our capital city. We need to love it and it needs to have a funding model that works because transport, as we've seen, you know, people will forgive politicians for getting things wrong, but if their tube is delayed, they will be furious.
Or if the tube is not there.
Well, exactly.
You know, we could be looking at a situation where, and I find this extraordinary, we could be using Bakerloo line trains in, you know, into the 2040s when they'd be about 70 years old. And I mean, that is insane for a global city.
And the difference between the tube lines is stark. You know,
yeah.
People often forget, but if you get on one of the northern lines, which, by the way, half of the northern line is being chopped off
for
6 months, in comparison to something like the Victoria line, your ability to get places is massive.
Which, you know, without getting into full urban planning affects the
economic... Or our personal gripes with our tube lines.
You know, affects the economic geography of a city and how that is built. So it will be interesting. I think my instinct is some money will be found because as much as London and Whitehall seem to be at each other's throats at the moment, and I don't personally remember a government that I felt was so hostile to the capital than the one we've got currently. Or maybe not hostile, but just sort of thinks we'll get on with it and it'll be fine because it's London. But it does contribute a net 36 billion quid to the Treasury each year. If the public transport network isn't working in the middle of that city, it won't be 36.1 billion in future because people won't be able to get around, and that has a massive economic impact. But on that note, we will look forward to a weekend, no doubt, of engineering works and disruption, and we'll blame TfL for that before next week we go back to blaming Whitehall for a lack of cash. Sasha, thanks for joining us. That's all from us at the CDB podcast on this Friday. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with all the news and views for your evening commute. I'm Vinandi Sylvester. See you soon.